Hello, this is your recording for day 23 of a 30-day journey into stillness. A couple of weeks after the shocking revelation of my fierce no to God during the Godalogue, I walked my first ever labyrinth in a day-long silent retreat at Vancouver School of Theology. The instructions for the labyrinth walk were to choose something that we were struggling with, so I had no problem with what to contemplate while walking into the center of the labyrinth. I was deeply troubled by the force of my God denial. It was not how I saw myself. It also did not match a lifetime of receiving feedback from strangers of the opposite kind, those who could see or sense consciousness said that I was very gifted. Of course, habits of ego being what they are, I took this to mean that I, the separate identity responding to the name Laura, had to do something, to be something, above and beyond. I felt it as an enormous responsibility. The egoic pressure would increase each time I received one of these comments, even though I am sure they were meant to encourage me. I did not realize when I was younger that it was the indwelling God that was being seen. As long as I had heard these comments from the separate identity, it only served to bloat ego and make me separate, and ironically build a massive defense between God and ego. So this has been a humbling journey, the journey into stillness. It includes the nakedness of our habits of separation. But there is such a sweet beauty when one lays oneself open like that. It's really a taste of freedom when we are with our imperfections and our wrong turnings. Because we are close to God, we know we're held in them. So it's a very different way than the egoic pressure that I felt for much of my life. That I, the separate identity, had to create something or do something. That's a very different feeling than one of being used, if you will, by the divine, by the higher levels of consciousness. In other words, being, we could say, surrendered, we could say, in alignment with. There are other words to use, because surrender for a lot of us means some sort of capitulation. And we really don't like the word. Most of us don't care for the word. So don't get hung up on the word. It's just like the word God. Many people, especially those raised Catholic, have trouble using that word. So it's okay to find another one. As long as you get the sense of what I'm talking about. So feeling into for yourself the separate, the momentum of the separateness of the egoic self, of the self that wants to be something special or has an idea of itself being such and such. It's really built on layers and layers and layers of defense. And there is, I don't remember who wrote this book, but it's called The Naked Now. And that's really when we come into presence, capital P presence, the presence of God within, the indwelling God. There is a nakedness. We come before God, we experience this indwelling presence in our vulnerability. And yet, again, paradoxically, within that vulnerability, we're held in a much stronger, a more solid, more connected with all of life kind of way than we ever could get to on the separate self agenda, which is full of effort and striving. So it's really important for you to, these stories I tell aren't to so that you get to know me better, although that might be nice, side effect. They're actually for a reflection. They're actually a mirror for you to be with both the denying force, the no to God, and not make a problem of that. As soon as we do, we get more entangled in it. So treating it lightly, but seeing it, very important, or it becomes shadow. And then shadow always runs the show. We have to turn and face shadow, bring it into the light. So we see that aspect, and then we experience an energetic shift. I often feel it in my heart. It's I think I've described this in other audios in this series, this lifting up sensation. And many times in the Hebrew Bible or the Old Testament, there's a, you know, I lift my eyes towards God, or my heart lifts. There's a lifting of the chest. There's a recognition and a yearning for these higher dimensions. So just see if you can feel that as well in yourself. And if the mind seems too busy to sense into any of this, if the mind is really keeping you from feeling anything, don't make a problem of that. That is just the mind. And I have a very active mind. And sometimes what my mind is doing is it doesn't want to calm down. It's a form of numbing, really. To have kind of non-stop commentary, non-stop thought, judging what you're hearing, dismissing it or accepting it. The mind is very, very busy, and it keeps you on the surface of what's being said rather than the contemplative dimension of the energy these words are pointing to. So, in doing these audios, I'm actually employing words to fuel the contemplative aspects. But if that part of your brain, that that aspect of yourself isn't stabilized, don't be surprised if there's a reactivity from the more dualistic, or what I'm calling, using Richard Rohr's terms, the calculative mind. Don't be surprised about that. There's no judgment here. It is the mind at work. And that's a very different thing than the words. There's a wonderful saying from St. John of the Cross that words can do for the soul what the sun can do for a field. When you hear sacredness in words, when you hear alignment, and alignment, you intuit. See, these are the spiritual faculties that we're starting to wake up, and you begin to intuit the sacred through the word. It does light the soul. It lifts the heart. It has an energetic impact. Just the way if you're looking at a field, you know, a field of wheat or something, and the sun's been behind the clouds, and then the sun comes out, and the field lights up. Same field. It's the same field. It's just that it's lit up, and that's how the ordinary becomes the extraordinary, the divine. The divine becomes alive in the ordinary. So there's this constant stilling, this constant quieting, constant dropping in. And as we do that, as we settle, we're much more available for an this emergent quality of the sun coming through our emotions, our psyche, our mind. So I love that phrase of St. John of the Cross. Words can do for the soul what the sun does for a field. So just checking in. Where are you hearing these words from? Are you in the center of your head? Are you grounded? Are you lost in thinking about something that happened in the day? Are you judging these words? Are you dismissing me because of them? Are you loving me because of them? And you know, either really doesn't matter. What's most important, the most important thing, is that you are with yourself, that you have a recognition of what's going on in you. What your projections are, I'm really not that concerned about. And I do hope some of you who haven't will get back to me about available times this weekend. I'm trying to do a final conference call for all of us on the 27th or 28th. It's looking more like the 27th in the morning works for more people. Early afternoon looks still open. We've got a few time zones going on, so please let me know. And the reason I just thought of that is because we really need to, one way to own our projections and our judgments is by sharing them. If I have a projection and I'm in relationship with someone and I want to continue to be, and I keep having this judgment or projection or whatever come up, it's sometimes, not always, but in my case, very helpful to air it out. Not as me being a target, but as a deepening in our trust. We have to learn to trust each other. And trust me that I'm not going to write you off or make you wrong. I really genuinely feel very deeply passionate and connected to each of you and your journey. And that's because I am no less passionate and connected and committed to my own. So we're beginning to open our eyes, or you could say our spiritual eyes, are beginning to be less veiled, so that we begin to recognize the other's deep yearning, and then we hold it very, very tenderly, because there's nothing more sacred than human yearning for God. And it's a vulnerable position. That's basically why my no was so fierce in my first Godalogue. I am no different than anyone else. I don't want to be vulnerable. As a separate identity, vulnerability is an anathema. The only way it translates is when the separate self knows itself held in love. And then, over and over, as it senses this vast love that we all are held in, that we begin to relax and let go. And then we can serve from what some spiritual teachers, I know Andrew Cohen called it this, the authentic self. So that's the self that comes through the depths of spirit and soul and makes its contribution through that depth. Told some of you this, one of my favorite stories, fables, is when the sun and the wind have a competition, and the competition is around having this fellow who's out walking and he has a hat and a coat on, and they're wanting to compete to have him take them off, and that would be a symbol for our armor, our defenses. So the wind goes, and this would be all our efforting and our trying to fix ourselves. And it's very, it's an effort. The wind is symbolizing our effort, and blows and blows and blows. And the guy, instead, he hangs onto his hat, puts his hand on his head, and hangs onto his coat tight as he can, hunches down, and the wind finally gives up. And then the sun comes out, which symbolizes being held in ultimate reality, which is divine love, beauty, grace, truth, goodness, all of those aspects. And the sun gets hotter and hotter, and the guy just naturally takes his coat off and his hat off. So I'll leave you now to be in silence, be in stillness, be in deep contemplation, with your beautiful self, however that shows up, for at least 10 minutes. And thank you.